Good afternoon. Welcome back after a long break of a month. We're breaking again for a month, and then, of course, as Sonia said, we will have this continuous session in May. Every week we'll have a talk. Today we will look at conflict in relationships, and we will look at it in the context of these two spiritual powers we often speak about in Raja Yoga, the power to face and the power to cooperate. But before that, we'll begin with some meditation, a few minutes, and then we'll begin the talk. I allow the body and the mind to settle down. Accepting all sounds and sensations to be a part of my natural landscape. I try neither to hold on to any sound or sensation. Nor do I fight against any sound or sensation. I gently work at the level of my own awareness. Turning my attention away from this external physical reality and turning my attention within disappear deep into the self. I experience my entire existence merging, converging, concentrating. Concentrating into a point in the center of the brain, a point of infinity, the source of all life and consciousness, the soul and the spirit, my original and eternal identity. This body, my costume. And I, the eternal actor, the detached observer, the silent witness, looking out through the windows of these eyes, listening through these ears. Just a speck of consciousness. I experience as though this physical world and this physical body
has disappeared from my awareness. All that remains is light. I see myself as pure. Pure consciousness. Beyond the limits of matter. Beyond the limits of space and time. I see myself in a world of light. The eternal home of the soul. And I see myself in the presence of God. The light of all lights. The brain and the body. consciousness to this brain, life to this body. Looking out through the windows of these eyes, listening through these ears. Silent and peaceful.
Okay, so today we will be speaking a little bit more about relationships and especially conflicts in relationships. We will look at close relationships mostly. That will be our focus. So we have relationships and we have conflict in relationships. Relationships, of course, involve someone else. This other could be an individual. The other could also be a group of people. It, of course, involves the self. And we will try and explore this dynamic of conflict today in relationships when it pertains to the self and the other. Relationships are, of course, very important for us, right? Source of great joy, source of great happiness. We learn so much in relationships. The other in the relationships becomes a mirror for the self sometimes, reflecting back to us how we come across to others, reflecting back to us sometimes how we are. We may not always be aware of how we are. Relationships are a source of joy and happiness and security and power, but they are also a source of learning. Very, very important. Some philosophers say that relationship is critical for the experience of the self, I. They say the very reason why we have the need to say I is because there is a you. If I was the only one in the world, there was no you, would I have the need to call myself I? So this I is born out of you. I is born out of you. The sense of identity, sense of self is constructed, and largely it is constructed through relatedness. I is fundamentally a related construct. It's constructed out of relatedness. And therefore relationships are critical for the construction of identity, for our sense of self, give us great joy. At the same time, we also know relationships are a source of great sorrow, source of great anxiety, source of great fear, great pain and hurt. In fact, the kind of hurt and helplessness and pain and trauma people experience from a natural disaster is very different to the kind of hurt and trauma people experience from a relationship, right? It's very different. Which is more painful? What do you think? The experience of having lost something because of a natural disaster, or the experience of having lost something because of somebody else's behavior towards me? What is more painful? What do you think?
The second one?
Yeah? You saying something?
Blame
nature
in the same kind of way.
You can't blame nature. You can blame God. That's what people used to do. Even now they do, right? Something goes wrong, it's him. But anyway, it is true. And a lot of research shows that the kind of damage people experience through a relationship is deeper, far deeper than the kind of trauma one may experience through something that is, you know, so-called natural occurrence. And even the natural occurrence becomes painful when that natural occurrence involves the loss of relationships. If actually there's a natural occurrence and you lose your property and you lose many things, but you don't lose these close relationships that are valuable, then it's not that painful. In fact, people can very easily recover. It's not a big thing. It becomes painful largely because we lose the relationships we value. So relationships are, of course, a very important aspect of human existence. At the same time, in relationships, many times we experience conflict. So what is the experience of conflict? How will you describe the experience of conflict in a relationship? What is a conflict? Let's first look at that concept. Yes?
That the people involved have different interests.
There is some difference of interests, maybe difference of opinions, maybe. So because there is a difference, what does it create? Well, there are many differences. But when do differences create conflict? We're all different, right? We have different interests. We may have some similar interests. They don't always create a conflict. When do they create conflict?
When there's a lack of acceptance.
When there is a lack of acceptance. There is a disagreement, but along with the disagreement, there is a discord. There is a lack of acceptance. What else? Any other experiences that we can have? So there is a discord, disagreement, there is a lack of acceptance of the differences. What else? Yes?
Misunderstandings.
So there are also misunderstandings. Many experiences of conflict that we have. Are conflicts always bad? Can they be good? What do you think? What are your thoughts? They can also be good? When are they good? When are they not so good? When can conflicts be constructive and when do they become destructive?
When you communicate with each other, you listen to each other.
When we listen to each other, when we communicate to each other, what do we mean by communication here?
We exchange information.
We exchange information. But don't you, have you not experienced sometimes when we try to communicate and exchange information, the other misperceives or misunderstands or
that's
gets
you
upset?
Have to maybe communicate and make sure that the other person understands you right.
Mm-hmm. But that creates conflict sometimes, right?
Yeah.
I want the other to understand I'm right.
Yeah.
The other does not think I'm right at all. And that creates a problem. But yes, we have to communicate. What should be that communication about? Yes?
I'll just say the conflict is when you're not agreeing on values or the goals or your attitudes or whatever. That's usually when you have conflict.
But is that, so there is a disagreement. But when is it, when can it be constructive?
It can be if you can develop, that means you listen and then you develop as an act of that.
Yes. So there is, of course, this aspect of communication. What should that communication be around?
You can have the ability to grow personally, relational with the other.
Yes, when will that happen?
When you can mirror each other in a good way and see.
When we mirror each other in a good way, when we are constructive. Any other thoughts?
We
learn something.
Maybe when you accept that you don't have to be the same, that it's okay that you don't necessarily want everything the same way, share all the same goals. Maybe you just have to share some goals.
So we agree to disagree and you're happy. That's good.
Sometimes.
If when we can do that, it's really nice, right? You accept there is a difference and you move on. Any other thoughts? Yeah?
When you can meet in a, what you call it, eye to eye, that there is not this difference that one feels, that one feels over the other.
Mm.
That when you can meet, it just soul
as,
to soul.
Okay, soul to soul, as equals. Any other thoughts? Yeah.
It makes you re-evaluate your values. Sometimes when you're in a conflict, you actually realize that you're not right. That can be very constructive.
When will it make us re-evaluate things in a constructive way?
you know deep inside if you're right about something, but sometimes you take a conflict just because of the sake of it, not because of...
We take it, basically we take it personally, right, many times. There is, of course, conflict and conflict transformation, conflict resolution has been the subject of research for a very long time. Today I will try and also tell you some things about what research tells us about conflict. And when it comes to this constructive, destructive aspect of conflict, we know conflicts can be constructive. All of you have said that sometimes we learn, it makes us reevaluate things, it makes us see things differently. The situations in which a conflict can be constructive is generally when the conflict and the communication, some of you spoke of the communication, when the conflict and the communication is not between people, it's between content, ideas, thoughts. When people are able to keep it at the level of content, the moment conflicts become personal, they become destructive. So we have on the one hand conflicts that are related to content. On the other hand, we have conflicts that are relational. So when we say relational, there are emotions involved. It is effective, as we say in psychology. So on this hand, it can be constructive. Many a times it can be constructive. Here it is largely destructive. And that is because the ideas on which, or the thoughts or the values upon which there is a disagreement, don't just remain thoughts or values and ideas. They become intimately identified with one sense of self. Become intimately identified with one sense, the other sense of self. And therefore it becomes relational. The moment it becomes relational, the chances are that it can become quite destructive, degenerative. It's a generalized thing. So the disagreement is not just that I would like to do things in this way and you would like to do things that way. That's no longer the disagreement. The disagreement becomes between I and you. So I disagree, not just with that idea, but with you, which means with you as such, with the whole person, and then there is a conflict, there is a problem. This many of us know. People speak of constructive criticism. How to give feedback to others. A lot of training is done in organizations for this. How to give constructive feedback. That people can actually learn from differences of opinion and all that without getting affected. And yet, it remains so tough. You know, there is a lot of research on feedback. And research is pretty conclusive that feedback mostly doesn't work. And yet, we want feedback, right? How do we grow? How do we develop without feedback? Many times we are not aware of how we are coming across, but a lot of research shows feedback. In fact, there is a lot of research that shows that, and it doesn't matter how you give feedback. So people say, oh, well, first share the good news, soften the blow, and then give the bad news, right? Doesn't really help, because the person who is listening, when he hears the good news, is already anticipating the bad news. And so it doesn't, some people say, shall we give the bad news first and then the good news, or the good news first and then, either way, doesn't seem to be much of a difference. Because when it becomes relational, or when it is perceived as relational, when it is perceived as personal, it doesn't really help. A lot of times after feedback, people's performances go down because of the effect. And feedback works. But for it to work, certain conditions have to be fulfilled. And we will speak about that today. Otherwise, it becomes something that is not very, very useful. So anyway, destructive. So constructive is good. We know that. Let us look at the destructive aspects. Let us look at the emotions involved in a negative conflict. Right? So what are the emotions involved in a conflict? Let's look at these emotions. In your experience, what are the emotions involved in a conflict?
Disappointment.
Disappointment. What else?
Jealousy.
Jealousy. Envy and jealousy. Let's try and put these down. So, on the one hand, you have envy, jealousy. You also have disappointment. What else? As a result of the conflict, What emotions do we experience?
Fear, anger.
There is anger, fear. What else?
Sorrow.
Sorrow, hurt. Sorrow is, of course, of various kinds. So there is hurt, there is fear. What else? Mainly these emotions. Research tells us there are some other emotions as well, and some are even positive emotions associated with the experience of conflict. And we will speak about that a little later. But anything else that you can think of? Yes?
Sense of rejection, maybe.
Yeah, so hurt, rejection, something like that, connected to that. So let's say sense of rejection, hurt. There is also the experience of frustration many times, and we will speak about that as well. There is envy and jealousy towards others, and there are certain reasons under which that is experienced. There is also the experience of contempt. You know this contempt? How do you say that in Danish? What's that? Foraktful? Forakt. Okay, that's what it is. I learned the word now. Okay, so contempt. And then there's another very interesting thing. Research also tells us there are, especially in the emotion of envy, jealousy, and contempt, there are two important experiences that people consider. One is the experience of the other's level of competence or skill on an activity or a task. And the other is the experience of the other's warmth. How warm the person is. How sincere the person is. How sincere and honest the person is. It's an experience of warmth. And then, in the experience of envy and jealousy, research shows, when people are envious or jealous about someone, mainly envy, let's underline this, not so much jealousy, but mainly envy, they experience the other as having high level of skill or competence, but low level of warmth. This is a very interesting thing because it actually gives us the tool to deal with people who are envious or jealous of us. We'll come back to that. In the experience of contempt, the experience is the person lacks both skills and warmth. So the person basically doesn't deserve anything. That's the experience of contempt. Contempt, when people are contemptuous towards another person, they feel, the person is not warm and therefore I have no obligation towards that person and therefore I can dislike that person. And the person also doesn't have any skill or competence, so I can just run that person down and dismiss that person. In one way, it's also an expression of anger. In the experience of envy, there is skill. I understand the person has competence and skill, but I don't perceive the warmth from that person. And therefore, this experience of envy, sometimes also jealousy. How can you transform that? Say, if someone is feeling envious or jealous towards us, what do you think is the reason for that? And how can we transform that? The rational way of doing it is, understand, the other person is feeling insecure and therefore the person is feeling envious about me. Doesn't help. Doesn't remove the conflict. You were saying something.
If we are warm towards them.
It's very simple. And it actually works very well. You're right. It's very, very simple. Tried and tested methodology. If another person is feeling envious or jealous towards us, and it happens very often in the workplace, it can also happen in families, it can happen between parents, especially with regards to children. Children are closer to one parent and not the other parent. One parent feels envious of the other, and lots of dynamics come in, and it is quite painful. And the moment I understand that there is this experience of envy and jealousy, it can happen between siblings, very often sibling rivalry, so-called sibling rivalry, competition between siblings for various things. There is envy, there is jealousy. And a very easy way of doing it is to express warmth towards the person, express love towards the person who is feeling envious and jealous. And through that, there is a deep transformation in that relationship. And a transformation. And we actually have the control of transforming what other people are feeling towards us when it comes to situations like this that create conflict. But anyway, so we have experiences of rejection, fear, frustration on the one hand. We have experience of envy. We have experience of contempt. We know very clearly that hurt leads to anger. Fear can also lead to anger. Frustration leads to anger. Envy and jealousy are experiences of anger, and so is contempt. We know that. But when we speak about emotions, what is behind the emotions? Usually what happens in a conflict is, two people in conflict, they are so caught up in the emotion. They are so caught up in the emotion. And because they are caught up in the emotion, they are unable to go beyond, they are unable to solve. To solve the conflict, one has to go beyond the emotion. Which means I need to understand, where is the emotion coming from? Ego, yes, of course. But what aspects of the ego? So the one is the experience of these emotions in the conflict. Where do emotions emerge from?
History, personal history.
Well, yeah, you're right. Personal history has led to something which then leads to the expression of certain emotions in certain situations. Yeah?
Expectations.
Yes, and that is the feeling. So we will try and make the connection between the emotion and the feeling and what happens in between. So there is the feeling and there is the emotion. And in between there is a process. Some have spoken about expectations. It's very closely associated to expectations. Were you saying something?
Perceptions,
expectations. In research on conflict, people speak about beliefs. These beliefs are, of course, shaped through experiences, past experiences. We know that. And in specific, when it comes to conflict, people have spoken about, research has disclosed five kinds of beliefs that people hold. Five kinds of beliefs, which are typically behind the experience of conflict, especially the destructive conflict, where there is a lot of discord, dissonance, negativity between because of a disagreement. And so the first belief, and a very interesting belief, the first belief set that seems to be behind the experience of conflict between self and the other is actually the experience or the belief of one's superiority. One is better than the other. A belief. I am better than you. There is a sense, along with that sense of superiority, there is a sense of chosenness. And in groups, when we go to group conflicts, you can see that very, very clearly. We are the chosen people of God, for example. And because we are chosen, we can, you know, kill you and do whatever we want. And throughout history, we see this sense of chosenness, sense of specialness, sense of superiority. You're saying something?
It could also be lack of self-worth that go beyond the emotions.
Yes, you have touched upon a very deep feeling, and we will connect that. Because superiority, we know also psychologically, people speak of an inferiority complex and superiority complex. It's a complex, because it's slightly pathological. And it's slightly pathological because superiority, we know, is an overcompensation for feelings of inferiority. People originally feel inferior. They don't like that feeling. And therefore, you construct a sense of self that is inflated. And you convince yourself that you're actually superior and greater. So it is actually an illusion that is constructed. And it is founded also on this experience of deep-rooted feelings of inferiority. And these are the feelings. So there is a belief. The belief of superiority originally emerges from feelings of inferiority. And this is the connection. The belief of superiority, wherever, even in my own self, the moment I start thinking in terms of how I am better than others, immediately I can understand I'm operating on the feelings of inferiority. One is to understand that I can do things a little better than someone else. That's a different story, but there are no emotions involved in that. That's just an understanding. Some people are better at cooking something better than, you know, I know. Some people are better at speaking it. That's a different story. It's an understanding. That does not involve emotions. The moment emotions come into play, sense of pride comes into play, superiority comes into play, there are feelings of inferiority underlying that. And this is the way, by going deep into the experience of the emotion, I can go, by understanding the beliefs, I connect to the feelings. And so, superiority is one belief set that seems to be behind conflict, and it is, as we've spoken about already, very clearly connected to feelings of inferiority. Along with superiority, there is another belief set that is involved in the experience of conflict. So there is superiority. But along with superiority, there is the experience of helplessness in the experience of conflict. There is also the experience of distrust. There is the experience of vulnerability. You understand this vulnerability? The belief that I am open to injury. The belief that there is always a threat, internal or external threat, of being hurt, of being injured. I am vulnerable. You follow this? And because there is the belief that I am vulnerable, people are constantly vigilant, over-vigilant, seeing threats in everything. And because they have this perception of threat, because of the belief of vulnerability, the perception of threat leads to the desire to defend the self. So this is one belief set underlying the experience of conflict, that I am vulnerable. I am open to injury. I am open to hurt. The other is distrust. Lack of trust in others. The belief that others' intentions cannot be trusted. The belief that others are out to exploit you. Or exploit the world. The belief that others have evil intentions and therefore you cannot always trust them. This again creates a mentality of protection, self-protection, ego defense, and therefore it can lead us to misperceive certain simple statements, certain simple disagreements as a sign of the other's evil intent, when in reality there might not necessarily be evil intent. So we have on the one hand the experience of superiority coming from experiences of inferiority. On the other hand, we have the the beliefs of distrust and vulnerability. What feelings do they emerge from? Lack of trust, inability to trust others, thinking others are out to exploit. I mean, yes, people do have wrong intentions sometimes, but if people are operating on that belief all the time, then you're constantly operating under threat. So what is the feeling underlying that is leading to these beliefs? Distrust, vulnerability.
Fear.
Fear is the emotion.
I'm not good enough.
That's inferiority. Yeah? It's also very deeply connected. But the other deep feeling, insecurity. Insecurity and inferiority. On the one hand, there is the feeling of I'm not good enough, inferiority. On the other hand, there is the experience of insecurity. I'm not secure. I am not protected. So we have these feelings operating deep beneath, leading to the construction of these belief systems, and these belief systems lead to the experience of these emotions. So there is superiority, the experience of superiority, also coming from this feeling of inferiority. And so superiority, there is one more. One, two, three, four, fifth one I'm forgetting, sorry. What was that? There's something else that I'm unable to remember right now. But it comes in here somewhere. And that is also connected to the experience of inferiority. What is that? I forget. I'll tell you next time. But fundamentally, and then of course there is the experience of helplessness. Why do people have the experience of helplessness? The belief that, helplessness here is the belief that I cannot really do anything. things cannot be changed. Things cannot be changed. Yeah?
Maybe you're not aware of your own resources, or you haven't had tools to, or you don't have that experience of solving conflict before.
Yeah. This, we don't have that experience. And therefore, that leads to the feeling of not being in control, a very poor sense of control over the environment, over your own behavior, over other people, for example, a sense of, very deeply connected to insecurity again, but we could say a sense of low control, leading to the beliefs of helplessness. And then these lead to the emotions. So, inferiority, when I'm feeling I'm not good enough, I am inferior. There is the experience sometimes of superiority. And then that can lead to the experience of hurt and rejection. That is, the ego is hurt, you could say, in other words. Distrust and vulnerability, I am experiencing threat. And therefore, one way of dealing with threat is fear. Fear of being, fear of my security being compromised, leading to the experience of anger. I feel a very low sense of control. I feel helpless. That is very, very frustrating. And this frustration, again, can express itself in the experience of anger. So we have emotions emerging from certain beliefs, emerging from some deep feelings. And of course, these feelings are based on experiences that we have had in the past. Yeah.
I'm not quite sure about the difference between emotions and feelings.
Yes, that is true. It's a very important question. So, emotion is generally spoken of as an intense state of excitement. There is some excitement there. And it is usually directed, it is directed towards an object. It is short-lived. So fear is something I may feel for a certain duration of time and then it dissipates. Anger is something I may feel for a certain duration of time, it dissipates. Contempt or envy or jealousy I may feel for a certain amount of time and it sort of dissipates. Feelings are deeper, more subtle experiences which are more or less constant. They are more or less constant and they're very subtle. They are not intense experiences, like, for example, the experience of fear or hurt. These are intense experiences. There is an excitement in that experience. Feelings like insecurity and inferiority, very, very subtle. And normally, we are unable to see them. We are unable to grasp them because they are so subtle and very deep and sort of consistent. They are there.
It was used, you did it again. I feel hurt or I feel...
Yeah, we use... The way we use the word, of course, is that. And that's, I think, one of the problems. We use feelings to actually speak about emotions. So we say, yes, I feel hurt. I feel angry. That's one level. And then, of course, we are speaking about emotions. But feelings as such, when we the way we are trying to speak about them, at least, is this deep inner experience, which is pretty constant, which is behind our behavior, which is behind our motivations. And sometimes the experience of, as I said, the experience of inferiority may make us actually feel good. I feel superior. I feel a sense of pride. So the emotion as such is positive, but the emotion is actually built up on a deep-seated feeling of inferiority. So, and therefore, insecurity, for example, deep feeling sense of insecurity. I get a good job, I have a nice retirement plan, I can feel good, I can feel secure. But the underlying feeling of insecurity hasn't gone, it is still there. The outward situation and circumstances can make me feel a little fine, but the underlying feeling is still there. The emotions dissipate, I feel relaxed and calm, I feel de-stressed, but the insecurity is there. And therefore then what happens is, in moments of stress, in moments of challenge, in moments of, say for example, in relationships when there is a challenge, the deep-seated feelings emerge again. Because the situation, the circumstances are no longer controlled. So the deep-seated feelings emerge again and then I experience negative emotions. That's the understanding. And the reason behind speaking about this is when we are looking at conflict, Many a time we speak about the resolution of conflict at this level or at this level of understanding, cognitive. So you could say at the cognitive level. If we want to have a deeper resolution of conflicts, the understanding is we need to learn to associate the emotion I am feeling with the beliefs I am carrying, and the beliefs that I am carrying with the deep-seated feelings that I am holding deep inside. And this is referred to as the power to face. It's a very inner power, facing reality. Facing the reality of my own inner experience of inferiority, insecurity, and lack of control. That generally speaking, when people speak about facing, they're speaking about the power to face others in a conflict. From a spiritual perspective, yes, we say that is also important. Sometimes you need to face others. But there is a different way of facing others. The fundamental thing here is facing the reality of the self, the power to face. And the power to face is the power to confront. It is much more than confrontation. Confrontation not with the other, confrontation with the self. From a spiritual perspective, someone is doing something. I disagree with that. I disagree with that. I can voice my disagreement in a constructive way. But the moment I start feeling emotions, powerful destructive emotions, I am unable to do that. And in that situation, if I am to resolve that conflict, one way is to connect the emotion to my beliefs and to my feelings. Face the reality. Having faced that reality, I learn to transform that reality. And then we move on to the other power, and that is the power to cooperate. And fundamentally here, when we say cooperate, we are speaking about cooperating with the self, facing the reality of the self, but cooperating with the self, which means these emotions that I am feeling are transformed into something else. When I confront the reality within, anger is transformed into tolerance because I know the problem is not in this guy. The problem is here. I learn empathy. Empathy is the experience of feeling what the other is feeling, the ability to put yourself in the other person's shoes, where instead of envy and jealousy, instead of the anger towards the other, I feel empathy towards the other, which means then I can express warmth towards the other. As I express warmth towards the other, I'm able to transform the relationship with the other. This is the experience of empathy. So there is tolerance, there is empathy. And this transformation is basically cooperating with the self, where I am working with transforming my own inner feelings. This is the spiritual approach to conflict resolution. If I want conflicts between relationships to be resolved, I first work at the level of the self. I first get my house in order. I put my house in order. I fix myself. I transform my feelings. I transform my feelings of anger and jealousy and envy and contempt. I generate feelings of warmth towards the other, and believe me, when I do that, the conflict is already transformed. I don't need to speak so much to others. And if I haven't done this deep task of inner transformation, I can speak all I want with other people. It will not have that kind of impact. It will be a superficial impact. And then I will try and explain to others. They still won't understand. That will lead to more frustration. Then I try to explain more to them. They still won't understand. I get more frustrated. And this frustration gets deepened and deepened and deepened. The conflict gets deepened. After some time, there is no point trying to explain anything to anyone. Just get out. That's it. Finished. Period. End of story. Because I haven't worked at the level of my inner transformation. I have been trying to change it superficially. So the power to face and the power to cooperate, it's cooperating with the self, healing the self. So that requires understanding the self, understanding where my conflict is coming from, my beliefs and my emotions. At the same time, there is also this other process of facing and cooperating with others. So So this is other. The other is also an important party. But from a spiritual perspective, when we say facing others, what we mean is engaging with others. What does it mean? There is no negative change in my behavior towards the other. This is the power to face, which means basically, if there is a conflict, a negative, destructive conflict with another person, say it's in the family, between a couple, what is the common response to having a conflicting situation with someone close? Husband and wife, say, or a boyfriend and a girlfriend, or say, parents and children, when there is a conflict, how do people respond?
Get
angry, that's the emotion. Mm-hmm. What else? One is, it could also be constructive, sit and have a talk, if it's possible, and get angry, and then what do we do?
Fight.
And after the fight? After the fight is over, what do we do then?
We feel sorry.
Feel sorry. And then what?
We apologize.
Okay, that's very nice. If you can do that, that's very nice. What else do we do? That's very nice. But that would be engaging. The other tangent that many people become a victim to is escaping, avoiding. Conflict, avoid. Come home late, leave home early, leave before the other person wakes up, come back after the other person is asleep. All these clever strategies. The human mind is so clever, right? We can think of so many nice strategies. And I've seen this with many couples, right? Conflict has been going on for a long time. They first try speaking about it. It doesn't solve anything, and it doesn't solve anything because they haven't gone deep. They've just been sitting and talking about what they're feeling at the level of emotions. You said that and therefore I got angry. Yes, I'm very sorry, I should not have said that. Okay, fine. But why did it come out? Why did I say that? Why did I have that? That understanding is not there. It's not very clear. And so after some time, people try the superficial conflict resolution, sitting and talking to each other, and then they realize that it doesn't really work. And then what to do now? You start avoiding each other. Start Wechselfreundin, they say. Grown apart from each other. How does that happen? You start avoiding each other. Obviously, you start growing apart because you're avoiding each other. I mean, come on, that's obvious, right? You avoid each other, you grow apart, and then you grow apart, and then you have to move away, right? So, the spiritual understanding of the power to facing others is, of course, there is engaging. There is no negative change in my behavior, which means that if the other person has said something nasty to me, I continue to engage with that person the way I did before. No change. Can we do that? It's not tough. It's really not tough. I say on experience, it is not. It is tough. But it's really not tough when you get down to doing it. Because the moment you do it, you find a release of so much energy. You find a release of so much energy because by doing that, you have regained control. The other person is no longer controlling your emotion, your feeling, nothing. You have regained control. And as you have regained control, this feeling of inferiority and insecurity slowly begins to transform. Because then, the situation... And why did this feeling of inferiority and insecurity come into me in the first place? Because of some experiences and relationships in the past. Which I could not reconcile myself to. So now in the present, when the similar situation comes up, I engage with that person. As I engage with that person, and I make an effort to be the same towards that person, I am healing myself. I am healing the experience of insecurity and inferiority created by the experiences of the past. One for one. In fact, it's much more than one for one. And because of that, I regain my sense of security and sense of self-worth. Next time it happens, I do it again, I regain some more. Happens again, I do it again, I regain some more. And in this way, we create a positive spiral for ourselves. And every time I do it, I develop faith that I can do it. That I can do it again. Second time I do it, my faith that I can do it deepens. Third time, easier. Fourth time, even more easy. And fifth time, and therefore, there is this positive spiral, beyond, after some time, it becomes quite natural. You just do it. And so we start reconstructing feelings. That's very tough, but we can do it. We actually start reconstructing these feelings from which the beliefs and the emotions flow by transforming our behavior. Somebody had raised their hand? Yes?
I thought, how will it affect the other one? Will it also be, the other one will also benefit from it?
In my experience, yes. We may not be able to transform the personality of the other, but I would argue that even that is possible to some extent, because the other person also needs to make some effort, right? But the relationship will transform. The relationship will transform with the other person. Because the other person is also following the same process, right? If the other person is hurt and angry at me, the other person is also operating on those beliefs which are behind the experience of conflict and the emotions associated with the conflict, which means they're operating on the same inner feelings of inferiority, insecurity, sense of lack of control. And so when I engage with them and I continue to experience, and so we say, we express warmth and love towards them, we help them in some way heal. We are cooperating with them in a very silent way. And this is a silent cooperation. There is no need for much talk here. There is great power in that powerful silence that comes from understanding. And I've seen sometimes, you know, don't even need to sit and talk to them. Sometimes you need to. And we need to also understand when to talk and when not to talk. But many a times, we don't need to sit and talk and tell them, you did this and made me feel like this and... Oh, it's a lot of hard work. There's no need. There's really no need sometimes. You just transform what you are feeling. And when I transform what I am feeling, there is great power. The vibrations in the mind become powerful. Those vibrations of the mind that are powerful reach out to support that person. And very naturally, easily, painlessly, the relationship is transformed. Otherwise, speaking, confronting, the other person feels guilty and then apologizes. And then it's a lot of work. It's nice, it makes me feel good if someone apologizes to me. It pleases my ego. But it only deepens my inferiority. Because then I have become dependent on the other's apology to feel good about myself. I transcend apology. The other person may automatically apologize, or even if the other person doesn't apologize, it doesn't matter. The person realizes the mistake and the person changes. And that's what we want, right? Would we rather not have the person change for the better than just give me an apology and do the same thing again? Mm-hmm. Which is typically what happens, right? Were you saying something?
Yeah, I was just wondering if you could give an example so that I understand the process better, like from the different.
Okay, let's say I'm working in a company, right? And I'm working on a task. So I'm working on a task, let's say it is, I'm working in an advertising company and I'm doing copywriting, right? I'm a copywriter. I'm very talented, I'm not. I suck at copywriting. I've never even tried it because I know I suck at it. But anyway, so I'm doing copywriting in a team, in an advertising company, and I'm very, very good at it. I'm getting a lot of attention for that. I'm being rewarded for that. I'm being praised. People really appreciate my ability, right, as a copywriter. Someone else is recruited in the team. This person is also very, very good at copywriting. Very good, exceptionally good. And as the person comes into the team, people start paying attention to the other person. This creates a threat. Right? This creates a sense of threat. Because my experience, my identity of being a good copywriter and getting the rewards and recognitions for that were in some way hiding this experience of inferiority. I felt good enough. I felt good enough. But I wasn't actually good enough inside, but I felt good enough at the level of superficial emotions. The other person comes in, I am not able to feel good enough at the level of superficial emotions. The original feelings of inferiority are triggered. And then what can happen is this inferiority gets transformed into an experience of superiority, where I start convincing myself, I start talking to myself about all the ways I'm better than the other person. In my mind, I'm comparing, competing. And I'm saying, yeah, but I did that, and I did that, and I did that. A waste. But I'm doing that again and again. But at the same time, there is constant threat. Because there is constant threat, this may result in the experience of frustration, the fear that what I have will be taken away from me, envy in the other's skills, and jealousy because the other person is taking away something from me which I believe belongs to me. And therefore, what can happen then is I will oppose that person's ideas. I will not agree when we are sitting and working in a team. I will try to make a point to prove that I am also good, so that others around me will notice that I am making a clever point, that he is not the only one who can be clever. I can also be clever. And because I have this desire to prove myself, I end up making a fool out of myself sometimes. And sometimes because I am so intent on this, there is a disagreement, there is a conflict, the group dynamics start becoming destructive. The capacity of the team is compromised. The task can get compromised. Do you follow? And it's a pretty common pattern that we experience in many, for example, conflicts in work teams. Emerging from experiences of threat, emerging from experiences of inferiority and insecurity, which people are unable to understand. So that Neely, yes?
So let's say the copywriters are now having a fight, and one of them is realizing, whoa, I'm having a pretty strong emotion, and they're trying to backtrack whatever is the underlying
feeling. Yes.
And so you said something about identifying.
Yeah, so let me see. How do we solve the problem?
Yeah, because if you identify, okay, maybe I act like this because of something that happened, but I mean,
that doesn't solve the problem.
Yeah.
So how will I deal with that? Now, I'm that jealous copywriter, mm-hmm. right? And you are the person who's coming, from whom I'm feeling the threat. Mm-hmm. And I'm going. And then I sit down, because I'm very spiritual and all that stuff, I sit down and talk to myself, and I find out, it's coming from here, it's coming from here, right? So now what do I do? How do I deal with that situation? Just understanding this is not enough. How do I deal with the situation? I engage with the other. I face the self. At the same time, I have to transform these feelings. Transforming these feelings is learning to have empathy towards the other, which means I engage with the other, I start using the other as a resource. Rather than a threat, I start using the other as a resource. I start consulting with the other. I start asking you for your advice, for your opinion on projects that have come to me. I start engaging with you, I start expressing warmth and respect to you. What I want from you, I start expressing towards you. And through that process, I start transforming these inner feelings of inferiority and insecurity. And so eventually, you end up in a relationship where you are able to use each other's resources for a larger task of accomplishment. Okay. Rather than... This is the process of transformation. But this obviously requires a lot of spiritual power. It requires power, it requires knowledge, it requires this understanding, it requires this practice. Every time I experience conflict in a relationship and the negative emotions, it requires this practice of sitting down, understanding, okay, where is this conflict coming from? What is the emotion I'm feeling? Anger. Where is that anger coming from? Is it coming from fear? Is it coming from hurt? Is it coming from frustration? And where is that coming from? Oh, I felt I was so good at this task, superiority.